Well, human trafficking search, as you've described, it is fairly accurate to say electronic clearinghouse. We really are trying to gather all the information that we can about sex trafficking, labor trafficking, child labor, anything that relates to any aspect of human trafficking, which also includes labor exploitation. And it starts to go into climate change because it's these cross-cutting issues.
Human trafficking doesn't always take the form we first imagine. It can be found at almost any level of an organization's supply chain. What can compliance professionals do to assess human trafficking risk, and how can they leverage the resources of the organizations they work for to help root out this tragic problem? Gwen Hassan is here to help. This is Hidden Traffic.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Hidden Traffic. I am Gwen Hassan, your host, and I am very excited today to have Rebecca Enoch join me. She is the program director at Human Trafficking Search. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So tell our listeners a little bit, kind of just background information about you. I know you've got a fascinating connection to China. I'd love to know how you became interested in working in this space around human trafficking education and prevention. And so fill us in.
Well, it kind of got started for me back when I was working for a global climate change campaign called Earth Hour, based out of Australia. And in kind of looking at that issue and doing advocacy and connecting with people who worked on that issue, and this was like 2007, I started to see that climate change, you know, I kind of knew, but like it became much more sharply focused that the issue of climate change was so much larger than the environment, and that it really was a catalyst for so many things like political instability and refugee crisis. And so it started to kind of bubble up as like this overarching issue that, you know, if we didn't deal with it, would lead to a lot of bigger issues.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to the work with China. I was working with a San Francisco-based organization called Duehua, and they did a webinar series on girls in conflict with the law. And one of the series that we did was on sex trafficking. We had Nicholas Kristof from the New York Times come on as a panelist, as well as some really amazing judges from San Francisco that were part of the San Francisco Coalition Against Human Trafficking. And through that kind of conversation and organizing that webinar, I just really started thinking again about human trafficking, labor trafficking, and how it intersected with these big issues like climate change. And the focus at Duehua, the name means dialogue, is all about informed conversations and really being able to have informed conversations based on actual facts and not blocking dialogue, not stopping dialogue, but engaging in an ongoing conversation about how we address issues. And in this case, it was human trafficking. And so then when the opportunity came up for me with Human Trafficking Search, I thought this is a great next step because it really touches on so many things that are important to me that I see as really coming into sharp focus as the political situation, the environmental situation has escalated in so many ways in our world today. So the fact I'm a person who also likes ongoing dialogues, wants to support informed conversations that we can have. And I'm not about telling people how they should feel and how they should think, but making sure that people have all the right information to form their own opinions and understand the issues. Because I'm a glass half full person. I tend to think if people have the information, they would probably make better choices. So Human Trafficking Search was a natural kind of extension of that and really forwarding that mission, personal mission of mine. So I was excited about that.
I love that term, informed conversations. I think that's a great one. We, as you know, getting on my soapbox for a minute, as a society could do with more of those. I think we've become so polarized, especially over the last, you know, few years, that having informed conversations is kind of the purpose of the podcast, as a matter of fact. Talk to people who are informed and get their viewpoints and get their ideas and have people listen so they can come up with some new ideas. So
exactly.
Let's dive into a little bit of what exactly Human Trafficking Search is. Would it be accurate to describe it as kind of an electronic clearinghouse of information about human trafficking? Is there more to it? I know there's a lot of research on your site. So how does it work?
Well, human trafficking search, as you've described, it is fairly accurate to say electronic clearinghouse. We really are trying to gather all the information that we can about sex trafficking, labor trafficking, child labor, anything that relates to any aspect of human trafficking, which also includes labor exploitation. And it starts to go into climate change because it's these cross-cutting issues and really trying to have articles, reports, you know, news articles, but also scholarly articles. Mm-hmm. But we try to really have encompass every level of that conversation so that if you are, you know, someone who works in the field or an aspect of the field, you can find materials for any research you're doing to inform what you're working on. But if you are someone who, you know, I say like informed and cares, but isn't scholarly, someone who's just a lay person, but cares, you can go there and also find articles and information that will help you understand what are the issues, why we should be talking or doing things about them. And one of the things I love about Human Trafficking Search is that we are foundation funded, so I'm never fundraising, so I can promote the campaigns of other organizations that are doing great work out there. You know, I love making friends. That's my jam. So and when I meet people, you know, in the things that I'm doing in my role who are writing great papers or coming out with great reports or writing articles or someone like yourself where you're doing a great informative podcast, I can really push all that out, include it in our database. And if you've got something to say that's, you know, on point and about human trafficking, I want to know about you and we can put you in our database so that people can connect with what you're sharing. And I feel like there's so much good work being done out there and at all levels. And a lot of times getting that work connected with the person who can use it to take the step that could make a change can be difficult. People are in the research world. They're doing these reports and sending them out to the world. They don't know who's connecting with it and using that information. So if anything I can do to share that information more broadly with whoever might find that useful to make changes that are positive in the world, that's great. And I love that. But as you also referenced, we do original research as well, where we identify a topic. We just came out with a report called Cobalt Mining in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Mm. And it's, you know, an area where we have the Green Revolution going on, and that's a really great thing. But a lot of the components are, especially cobalt, is coming out of the DRC, which has a host of issues around child labor, labor exploitation. So we wanted people to connect the idea with climate change, green energy, that's great. We all want to be on board with that. But here's some issues that, you know, we want to look at so that our green revolution isn't built on the backs of children and labor exploitation for people in the DRC. So where we identify an area that people might not be connecting the dots, and usually our reports are not on as heavy on the scholarly side. We're trying to speak to a broader audience of people who are concerned and care, but don't know all the details. So we try to share it in a way that's not too heavy, not too long. You can kind of bite-sized information. So we do original research in that area as well. And as we identify those issues that come up and we feel need a little bit more boost, a little bit more clarity for some of the people who might want to do something about it.
That's fantastic. I've already referred a few people to your site because I've had a couple of colleagues reach out and say things like, hey, I'm trying to put together a presentation to educate my team about this issue. Do you have resources or where can I look or how can I communicate why this is important? So I love that connection and the fact that you're providing this clearinghouse is fantastic. So good work.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you mentioned the new report that you have put together on cobalt mining in the DRC, which of course brings to mind the conflict minerals rules. And what we've seen, unfortunately, so often in that scenario is companies deciding, oh, okay, well, the legislation says that I can't use, you know, conflict minerals. So I'm just going to stop buying from DRC. I'm going to withdraw. But during another conversation you and I had, you talked about how it frustrates you to see kind of this idea that we can legislate away the problem of human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And while there's a role for legislation, there has to be more. So what do you think is the more that we need to have? And are you concerned about legislation like conflict minerals, or for that matter, the Uyghur Forced Labor Protection Act that seem to incentivize stopping doing business with a part of the world?
Yeah. And you know, you're absolutely right that it kind of can begin with the legislation, and that's good. You don't have to begin with legislation. Obviously, that's ideal because then it frames any next steps. But a law in and of itself, whether it's stopping someone from using a particular product in their supply chain because of XYZ issue, yeah, or whether it's, you know, labor laws, you know, laws against child labor, which obviously I think was what we were focusing on in talking about COBOL. And yeah, I think child labor especially is one that everyone kind of says, yeah, no, we shouldn't have that. It shouldn't be something that goes on. Let's make laws. Let's stop this. And that's an area where I feel like I've been really trying to push a broader knowledge and conversation about it, because you can make a law that bans child labor, but it dismisses the reasons for that child labor. It's not like child labor is happening because the kids are like, no, I just love to work instead of go to school. Let me just do this for hours. I love it.
I'd like to stand for 14 hours on a factory floor and use my tiny fingers. Please let me.
Exactly. Yeah. And so laws aren't really going to stop it unless you look at the causal issues, which is fairly true of all the issues around human trafficking. What are the causal issues? And often it begins with social services. Kids are working because they can't eat, their family can't eat, and they want to contribute, or they need to contribute. They can't go to school. They don't have the money for it. And so they're trying to earn money to go to school or to take that secondary school, you know, and they need to earn money for that. Sometimes there's no childcare. So the parents have to bring their kids to whatever they're doing. And, you know, of course they may as well work while they're there. So if you don't address those root causes, you're just stripping away the family's ability or the child's ability to advocate for themselves, to have their own agency, and to really contribute to their own livelihood. I've seen a few campaigns that are really trying to give the children who are a part of child labor that voice of like, what do you want? What can happen? How should this work? You need to work. We don't want you working these hours and these. So there's that balance in there between finding out how we legislate and then how do we address the actual issues that are creating the situation to begin with. You know, you had mentioned the Responsible MICA initiative as kind of a win of a direction towards addressing that. And they have the right kind of formula there where it's like they're looking at the legislation and trying to legislate what should be done in terms of labor and child labor and forced labor and fair labor. Then they are also giving agency to the communities themselves, having dispute mechanisms in place so that they can stand up when something's going wrong and say, this isn't working, and actually providing support for kids so they can work, but work in a way that's fair for them, that's safe for them in the amount of time that's good for them. That's something that you can see that in COBOL, you can see that, you know, in all kinds of areas where getting involved, and whether that's partnering with, you know, obviously it's not like, oh, all the companies should now get into education for children as well. Yeah, it's more about partnering with organizations that can help do those things and supporting those initiatives in the community. It sounds silly, but I keep coming back to dialogue, like having conversations, listening first. So what are the issues that are happening? So when companies are trying to eliminate child labor or forced labor in their supply chain, there's the examination of where are the vulnerable spaces in your supply chain, and then what are the causes for that being in your supply chain, and how can we work with the communities to address those causes? And we can have the legislation, we have the community engagement, and then we have the policies and programs in place so that they all three work together in a chain to eliminate that forced labor, that child labor, or any of those human trafficking components that could be in the supply chain. And, you know, of course, it's not easy, but you have to begin to work on it in order to make any progress at all. Back to what you were saying about the pulling out, I feel like that is shutting down any kind of progress. That's shutting down any ability to improve the situation and denying
people. It cuts off conversation, actually.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And it denies the communities that need this work. I mean, they're not working in exploitative labor situations because they just love it. It's because they desperately need it. They need the work so badly that they're willing to work in exploitative labor practice or have their kids working. So removing that source of income from them doesn't address the issue. They're going to find some other exploitative situation doing something else, you know, because they've got to work. And I think we can all relate to that idea of like, I need to eat. I need to have a home. I mean,
exactly. What I'm hearing from you, and I really love this, is the idea that you can't one issue manage this, that it has to be a holistic approach.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is often missing. And I understand why. I mean, from most companies, because most corporations are at the place where they're just now figuring out that they may be inadvertently supporting human trafficking and forced labor through their sourcing practices or the kind of multiple levels of subcontracting that goes on that they don't have visibility to, or use of labor recruitment organizations. So they're now just getting their arms around that.
Yeah.
And they feel like, oh, okay, so I will just prohibit it and then I'm good. But the connection to an ESG mindset and a values-based mindset is so much more than that. And it does require, as you said, that kind of a holistic view of, hey, what do we need to do in terms of listening? What do we need to do in terms of community engagement? How can we invest in making this better, not just leaving?
So I
hope people will start to do more of that.
There's no quick fix and there's no one size fits all. It's not like, oh, well, what worked in the DRC to address those child labor issues? Let's just cut and paste that over to India and the, you know, the MICA sector. That's when that listening component comes in. Like, you know, as a corporation, where are you working? Talk to your community there. What are their issues? Why are they having issues feeding their family or getting into school? Like, what are the things happening there? And, and you know, it's not a quick fix, but we want to engage and try to figure this. And I agree with you that it's something that's coming up more and more. And I feel like even if companies aren't necessarily excited to get try to address this issue, that consumers are increasingly demanding it. And it's kind of part of our, one of the good sides of our global online community is that people can learn these things really quickly. So once they learn that this is involved with this company, and there's a lot of conversations happening about what do? We don't want it in there. We don't want, you know, the things we're buying to be part of this system of, you know, exploitation. Mm-hmm. So get ahead of it, get started on it now and be like, hey, we've been working on it. We've got this whole community thing going on with the kids and with the families. Let's start trying to do it now before someone says, oh, look, you're doing this and you've got this in your supply chain and it's some kind of bad situation for everybody. Like,
I think if handled correctly, it can become a kind of a brand value differentiator.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is, I was just reading about Ben and Jerry's. I'm a fan of Ben and Jerry's. Not only because of their social positions, but their ice cream is amazing. And they just partnered with a company called Tony's Chocolonely, who is one of the very few chocolate manufacturers who has, from its initiative, from the very beginning, partnered directly with individual growers. And the owner makes and visits regularly to every place that's growing cacao for them and verifies that they've got a clean supply chain. And I love that model of I'm investing in this community and we'll build this business as a community or in partnership with the community. And so I think you're right. I think we're going to see more and more of that model as, you know, the, I hate the phrase, but I'm going to use it, as the woke generation becomes more and more aware of how they're spending their money and who gets it.
And I think as a consumer, this is something that I feel like we have to think about is, what are you willing to pay for? I'm willing to pay to have ice cream that has responsibly sourced chocolate. I'll pay a little more because that's important to me. I'm voting. I think about my purchases as my vote. And what am I voting for? And what am I voting for in this world? And what are the values? So I can't buy as many ice creams as I might if I just bought Joe ice cream off the shelf.
Yeah.
But if I eat less ice cream, and I buy the more slightly, maybe slightly more expensive ice cream, then I'm voting for something that expresses all the values that I have. And that's important that we think about what are we voting for with what we're purchasing, and that we might have to pay a little more. But I think too, that those kinds of pioneering next steps where they take a stand and say, I'm doing this, I don't care that it, you know, it's not the most cost effective thing, that's what I'm doing, it has a normative effect on the market. And then everyone hopefully starts to jump on board and want to do all those things. And the cost goes down a little bit. It doesn't stay high because then the systems are in place and things become more of standard practice. And that's what we want to see.
There, there gets to be market pressure to meet your competitors where they are. And if you're modeling these kinds of practices, you kind of by default have to as well. So mm-hmm. I like, yeah, that tipping point of influence, I think, is an important thing to focus on.
And we want to throw our weight behind that tipping point. That's where we want to be sitting on that scale. And I want to circle back to, you know, your reference to the Uyghur and the forced labor in China and your comment about pulling out and withdrawing. And just going to echo again what I said before, that I am all about having conversations and keeping the dialogue going. And I don't, in that situation as well, like I'm going to say, I'm no expert on all the ins and outs of the legislation and how all the ramifications of it. But I do, I obviously am not behind all that's happening for the Uyghurs in China. I love China, but I don't like their policies in many instances. And this particular one, I don't think shutting down dialogue and pulling out for me personally is the best way to go. I feel like continuing to engage, trying to find ways where we can agree and taking steps to try to identify and winnow out those instances of forced labor. I'm not saying it's easy. Of course it's not. And I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. But I feel like China is a country that it's been around so long. They don't move quickly. They just don't change quickly. But continuing to have a conversation, continuing to try to engage and find ways to incrementally move forward, whether it's trying to put in small policies over time. And obviously the Uyghur thing is there's a lot to unpack there that's quite challenging on many levels. But I just am never the person who says, I just want to stop talking. Let's walk away. Let's get out. I feel like continuing to try to find a way that we can move forward and can work and engage with China is more the direction that I would lean towards.
I think it's interesting too that ties in. I mean, the model of conversations and informed conversation ties in and is supportive of what is at least believed to be the ideal kind of corporate culture, which is one where there's psychological safety and people feel they belong and their voice matters and they are listened to and encouraged to speak up and to come up with ideas or challenge the status quo or question why things are being done in a certain way. So it seems, I don't know, in many ways, like it would be a complete contradiction for a company to talk about this culture that they're building of psychological safety and speak up culture while also withdrawing their supply chain from a company because it's too difficult, or from a country rather. It seems like an inconsistent application of values, which I think we will see, unfortunately, more examples of as companies are coming to reckoning with the idea that they can't go back to the, you know, Milton Friedman 1970s model that the purpose of a company is making money, that it has to be the current model, which is it's to serve the communities that you serve, whether that's employees or engaged consumers or the countries you're doing business in. And that shift, I see it happening, but to your point about China, it's going to take some time. And that mismatch, I think we'll see more examples of, especially with the role of those very active NGOs out there, which I love, who are pointing out the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Who are saying, wait a minute, your, you know, ESG report says this, but you're doing that. So it'll be a fascinating time to be in this area. A lot of change.
Exactly. You know, there's a lot of positive things going on, which I, you know, I have to remind myself, there are some positive things going on. Like you said, that those NGOs that are pointing out the hypocrisy, like that's important. We have to keep doing that. But it's not the kind of thing where, oh, once you point it out, they go, oh yeah, let's, no worries, we'll fix that. You have to keep pointing it out and keep holding corporations accountable for what they say they want to do and what they're doing. But I think towards that, still trying to keep the conversation going, having it be a conversation like, hey, you know, this is happening and here's some ideas for how you can not do that, you know.
Or make it better. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So in a prior conversation, you used the phrase the trifecta of tragedy, which I love. Can you tell me for our listeners, explain what that means when it comes to human trafficking and forced labor? What is the trifecta of tragedy?
For me, the trifecta of tragedy is really something that came out of at what we were kind of talking about before, the intersection of climate change, the refugee crisis, and human trafficking. Because climate change is leading to political instability, which is, you know, wars of aggression, populations on the move because of lack of resources, lack of income sources, all those things. And so then that leads to the refugee crisis. And the refugee crisis leads to more vulnerability to every form of trafficking for everyone who's on that chain. And you can't immune yourself from that because, you know, like we're sitting in the United States, we do have a refugee crisis happening at our borders, but do we feel the effects of directly on a daily basis? Maybe not, but it's all interconnected. It's not like a over there problem or their problem. I'm not a refugee. I'm not feeling those effects. I've got a job. It's all interconnected. And so this trifecta of tragedy is like, we have to look at how all these things are coming together and what do we need to do now? Because we have an opportunity now to try to mitigate some of the challenges around, you know, not just climate change, but how are we handling these refugees and migrants? They don't want to leave their home. They want to stay where they are. Exactly. So, you know, back to the social services and how are we helping them on the ground if they have to leave because of, say, the war in Ukraine, you know, like something like that. Then how do we handle them at the borders where we see red flags of trafficking, where people could be vulnerable to labor trafficking or sex trafficking because of their instability? They don't have access to food, water, and housing.
Yeah.
That makes people psychologically quite vulnerable. So to people saying, oh, let me help you. I've got this, I've got that. And then before you know it, you know, they disappear into the vortex of some form of trafficking. Putting in place systems and policies that can really address those things all along that chain. And the intersectionality of these issues cannot be ignored or emphasized enough, because when we're talking about climate change, we need to recognize that it isn't just an environmental issue. It encompasses all the things, and that we have to address it, just like we were saying before, at all the levels. You know, we have to look at all the things that are currently happening and could be happening and try to put in place things to do these, to support what has to happen responsibly and well. And I think that's another point of conversation that Human Trafficking Search wants to look more at. I just attended a webinar where some people who worked for FEMA, and obviously there's a lot more natural disasters going on, which is another part of that trifecta of tragedy because of climate change. They were saying we need to have emergency responders and not law enforcement. Like, we're talking about food bank workers, Red Cross people who know how to identify signs of potential labor trafficking, sex trafficking for the people that they're meeting in the field who are in that vulnerable position. If they know, if they're trained what to look for, the right questions to ask, and what to do if they see,
if they encounter it,
then we can help these people who are in this vulnerable position of having their whole lives potentially wiped away in an instant because of some weather event, not now have another issue where they're getting hooked into some kind of trafficking situation. And I thought that is something that, you know, sadly is going to be increasingly important, because we are not going to see an end to natural disasters anytime soon, because we haven't done what we needed to do about climate change.
On climate change, exactly. Yeah. It all ties together into that holistic intersectionality, another great term. That's a model that I'm going to steal. I'm going to take holistic intersectionality. That's what we need. This has been such a great conversation, Rebecca. I really appreciate your time and your perspective and your work on Human Trafficking Search. Could you wrap up here with any final thoughts and also information about how people can find you and Human Trafficking Search?
Of course. The one thing I want to emphasize in all of this, because I know it can seem so overwhelming and kind of depressing. I mean, I struggle because there's so many issues coming up that seems sometimes intractable. And identifying trafficking in your supply chain isn't easy. And weeding it out isn't easy. It's not a quick fix. But my daughter, when she was 12, was really invested in orangutans and wanted to try to save the orangutans. And she came to me and said, "Mom, do you think we'll be able to save the orangutans? But do you think what we're doing, we'll be able to save them?" And I am an optimist, but I was a realist when I've talked to my kids about stuff like this. I said, "I can't promise you that. But we want to be part of the team that tries." And that's what I circle back to when I feel overwhelmed by these things, is that we've got to be on the team that tries. And we won't solve all the things, and we certainly won't do it tomorrow. But the work that we're doing is part of a force for good. in the world, and that we've got to be on the team that's trying to be in that force for good. And nothing will happen if we don't begin. So coming back to just being on the team that tries to address these issues and keeps trying, because the first time might not work. So we keep going and we keep working on it. I don't want to leave people feeling like, oh gosh, you know, that's a lot. And then obviously you can find us at humantraffickingsearch.org, and we have the global database, reports, and you can contact me there through the website. We're on Twitter and LinkedIn and on Facebook. You can contact me through any of those platforms because I'm behind all of that. If you write anything there, it's going to pop in for me. But you can also email me through the website at info@humantraffickingsearch.net. I'm happy to hear from people. And if you ever go to the website and you identify a resource you think we should have or someone we should talk to, please let me know, because I love making friends and I love promoting the work of others.
Informed conversations.
Exactly. Yeah. And we also really love guest bloggers. So if you've got something that you want to talk about that you think that's related to human trafficking, get in touch. You know, let's make friends.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you for being on the team that tries. I love that. I am too. I'm happy to. I think we need t-shirts made up, maybe.
Exactly.
Try something.
Yay.
Well, thank you again, Rebecca. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you. It was great to be here.